here tonight. We'll start from what I have on the point board as point number P, and then we'll work our way backwards. The reason why I came out the way is simply because of the way the handout was photocopied, not for any other plan or design. What is the iser of telling a guy to do malacha for you on Shabbos? Why is it iser? What is the source of this iser? There are several possibilities, and if you want to look at it inside, you can take a look at the second page, in the page I photocopied from the Shpir Shabbos Gilchasa in Hebrew. But I'll tell it to you in English. There are four possibilities of why it's not permitted to tell a guy to do work for you on Shabbos. The first is that it's learned out from a pasuk. The pasuk says, "Kol malacha lo yaseh bahem." No malacha should be done on Shabbos. And from this we learn out, lo taseh atah, you're not supposed to do any malacha, v'lo yaseh chavirecha, v'lo yaseh akum malachtecha. Nor can your friend, nor even a guy, do malachos, do work for you on Shabbos. And of course, there's a question, anytime we learn something out of pasuk, whether the pasuk is to be taken as a literal drasha, in other words, something which is on a daraisa level, or it's to be taken as something which is only a drabbanon, something which the rabbis really assert, but they attach it to a pasuk to make it either easier for us to remember or to give it heightened significance. That's one possibility. That's learned out from this pasuk of Kom Lecha Le'yaseh Bahem. The other possibility, the second possibility, which the Rambam brings down, is that the iser of doing work on Shabbos through a goy was promulgated by Rabbanon in order to safeguard the sanctity of Shabbos. Why? Because of the possibility of a slippery slope. Today you might tell a goy to do malacha. Next day, who knows? Next week you might be doing a malacha yourself. In other words, the moment we break the barrier and breach the sanctity of Shabbos and allow you to do malacha, even through a goy, perhaps eventually you come to do malacha yourself. The next possibility, the third possibility is, we have a pasuk in Yeshaya. The pasuk in Yeshaya tells us that on Shabbos, one has to refrain from pursuing your desires, by that we mean your financial and business desires, v'daber dover, and speaking the way you speak on a weekday. From this we learn out, v'daber dover, you're not allowed to speak the way you speak on a weekday, that you're not even allowed to speak to tell a goy to do malacha for you. That falls onto the category of v'daber dover, speaking things which are improper on Shabbos. The final possibility of learning out the iser of telling a goy to do malacha for you on Shabbos is to learn it out from the principle of agency, shlichus. We know that normally a goy does not serve as a shliach, as an agent for a Jew. For instance, if a Jew must take off truma from fruit, yes, the tithe is fruit, the Jew can appoint another Jew to take off the truma for himself. A Jew cannot appoint a goy to do that for himself. Why? Since a goy is not the same bar mitzvah, he's not involved in mitzvahs like a Jew is, it doesn't fall to the category of people I can appoint as agents. An agent has to be similar to myself. A goy is not similar to a Jew in that respect. However, there is a Gemara which tells us that yesh shlichus la'akum l'chumra. A goy can become your agent where it's going to be bad for you, where it causes us to say a chumra against you. And of course, this is a chumra. What's the chumra here? That you're not allowed to do a malacha on Shabbos. So therefore, excuse me? Right, that you wouldn't be allowed to tell a goy to do malacha on Shabbos. The fact that it is an area where the shlichus would be a chumra says that here we do take shlichus into account, we do take agency into account, and we do not allow a goy to become your agent on Shabbos in order that he should do the work for you. That's a chumra. In a case where we're machmir, by not giving the goy shlichus, in a case where we'd be machmir, by giving the goy shlichus, we give the goy the principle of shlichus. Let me explain that again. Here, if we gave the goy the right to be an agent for us, it would be a chumra. Why would it be a chumra? Because if when he does the malacha for us, he is now doing a malacha, doing something forbidden on Shabbos on my behalf. So therefore, here we give him the right to be an agent. Why? Because it's going to prevent and curtail me from engaging the guy in doing malacha for me on Shabbos. So in a case where the giving the guy the principle of agency will present for me a chumrah, will present for me a difficulty, we give the guy the possibility of doing shlichus for me, of being my agent, and therefore it's forbidden for me to tell him on Shabbos to do anything for me. Now the Avnei Nezer, a late posek in the late 19th century, brings out a very cute nafkamina, very basic distinction, whether we learn like reason number three, that you shouldn't speak the way on Shabbos, the way you speak on a weekday, or we learn from reason number four, that a goy has shlichus l'chumer, in other words, where it's a chumer for me, I say a goy has agency, he can't act on my behalf. He says nafkamina is like this. The gemina is, and we'll come back to this later as well, can I tell a guy on Erev Shabbos to do a malacha for me on Shabbos? And can I tell a guy on Shabbos to do a malacha for me Motzoi Shabbos? Why? If I hold the Isser is speaking on Shabbos things which are weekday type things, such as telling goyim to do malachas, so then there's no prohibition for me to tell the guy on Erev Shabbos to do the malacha on Shabbos. However, it would be prohibited for me to tell the guy on Shabbos to do the malacha Motzoi Shabbos, because then I'm speaking things that I shouldn't be speaking on Shabbos. If it's the other way around, that is because of agency, so then, when is the guy being my agent? When he actually does the activity. So if I tell him on Erev Shabbos to do work on Shabbos for me, he's my agent on Shabbos to do work, that would be forbidden. But if I tell him on Shabbos to do work for me after Shabbos, so when is he acting as my agent? After Shabbos. At that point, there's no problem anymore. So depending on your perspective, whether you learn the Isser is because of a daber dover, because of speaking things that you should not allow to, or whether your perspective is that it's an agency idea, you're going to have a difference in when and what you can, when you can tell the guy to do malach for you. Again, everybody would agree, no matter what the reason is, that to tell a guy to do work on Shabbos for, tell a guy on Shabbos to work on Shabbos for you is prohibited. Why? Because then you're telling him something on Shabbos which you're not allowed to, which is a v'daber davar, and you're also having him act as your agent on Shabbos, which is not permitted because of shlichus. However, when I tell a guy either on Friday to do something for me on Shabbos, or on Shabbos to do something for me on Sunday, then it depends. If I learn that the Isser comes from Dover, they shouldn't speak on Shabbos things which have to do with Malacha, so then it's going to be forbidden for me to tell a guy on Shabbos to do work for me after Shabbos, but it won't be forbidden for me to tell a guy before Shabbos to do work on Shabbos. Why? Because I'm not talking weekday talk on Shabbos. But if I learn that the Isser has to do shlichus, he's my agent, when it's a chumrah against me, so then the exact opposite is true. So then to tell him on Erev Shabbos, do malacha for me on Shabbos, is prohibited because he's acting as my agent then on Shabbos to do work for me. But if I tell him on Shabbos to do work after Shabbos, so then what's going to happen is, when he's acting as my agent on Sunday, he's no longer doing something which I'm prohibited to do. It's after Shabbos. So it would be permissible to tell him in that case, on Shabbos, to do after Shabbos a malacha. Okay, we'll see what the actual halacha is in a few moments. So now, again, we have four possibilities of learning the Isser. The overwhelming majority of poskim, almost everybody says that despite the fact that in one reason here we had a pasuk, nonetheless, it's an Isser d'Rabbana. The overwhelming majority of poskim say, what? Shmos tezva yudbeis tezayin kom lechol le'asa bahem. Again, but despite the fact that we have one pasuk, which is a possibility, the overwhelming majority of poskim hold that telling a goy to do malach on Shabbos is only a prohibition to Rabbanan. It's not prohibited min haTorah. Torah didn't prohibit it; the rabbis prohibited it, and we're going to see the ramifications accordingly. What? Asmachta. The pasuk is only asmachta. Okay, now let's go back to the beginning. Now we're going to go through the halachos. Now, you have here a very beautiful summary of the halachos. I know because I wrote it myself. So, we're going to go through this summary and explain it outside. First of all, the general principles of the Isser of telling a goy to do things on Shabbos. One, it is prohibited to tell or even hint in a way that infers a command to a goy to do any malacha, the raisa, or the rabbanon on Shabbos. And we'll see what that means, a hint that infers a command. We'll explain that with an example in a moment. What? It's prohibited to tell
on Shabbos to do it?
Or do you mean it's forbidden to tell him on Friday to do it? No, on Shabbos. On Shabbos. I mean, tell him on Shabbos to work on Shabbos. Okay. Yeah.
Why
yes. Excuse me? Because it's Kula Chad Gzera. Rabbanan included everything. There are exceptions. We'll get down to E, subcategory E, where there are exceptions. But in general, Rabbanan said it's Kula Chad Gzera. Now let's tell Goy to do anything, regardless of the type of Isser. Lo plug Rabbanan betakante. In other words, when they made the Gzera of Amir Lakum, they said, regardless of what you're dealing with, even if the Rabbanan, you're not allowed to tell them to do it on Shabbos. Okay, it is permissible, however, to hint in a way that does not infer a command to a goy to do a malach on Shabbos. And it is permissible to hint, even in a way that infers command, and here's your question, to a goy, either before Shabbos, to do a malach on Shabbos, or on Shabbos to do a malach after Shabbos. Okay, so here we have a very interesting distinction. To tell on Shabbos, you're not allowed to tell a goy to do malach for you, nor even are you allowed to hint to him in a way that infers a command to do a malacha for you. However, you're allowed to hint him in a way that does not infer a command to do work for you on Shabbos. If you're doing it on Friday for Shabbos, or Shabbos for Sunday, then you're even allowed to hint in a way which infers command, as long as you don't explicitly direct the goy to do that work. Very good question. Let's go further. First, point number three. In any event, it is forbidden for a Jew to derive direct benefit from any malacha done for him by a goy on Shabbos. Now, this is very important to remember. The issue of whether it's permissible to tell a goy to do malacha is distinct from the issue of whether you're allowed to derive benefit from the malacha which is done. It's possible in certain cases you're allowed to tell a goy to do malacha, but once you've told him to do it, you can't derive any pleasure from it anyway. Okay, those are two distinct areas. Again, in any event, it is forbidden for a Jew to derive direct benefit from any malacha done for him by a goy on Shabbos. Now we'll explain. Examples. It is permissible to say to a goy on Shabbos, it's hard to sleep when the light is on in the room, but not, why didn't you turn off my light last Shabbos? Everybody see the difference? If I say to a goy, it's hard to sleep when the light is on in the room, so that's a hint which doesn't infer a command. It's a statement of fact, the story. If, however, I say to the guy, why don't you come last week to turn off the light? That infers a command. That I'm telling the guy, you're in charge of turning off the lights here. What? And I really want you to do it now too. Exactly, right. Okay. It is permissible to say, I can't read because there isn't enough light. Or, the house isn't lit up enough because only one candle is burning. But not, do me a favor, there's not enough light in the room. Everybody see the difference again? In the first case, I can't read because isn't enough light, so I'm just telling a story. Or the house isn't lit up enough because only one candle is burning, I'm also telling a story. But when I say, do me a favor, there's not enough light in the room, it's almost as if I'm saying, do me a favor, turn on the light, because there's not enough light on in the room. So that's not good. Now, here comes the crucial point, which we'll come back to later on. If there was previously no light at all in the room, it is prohibited to derive benefit from the malacha of the goy, even b'mako mitzvah. This is important because people make a mistake. Let's say you're in a shul at night, and it's pitch black. So somebody says, listen, we got to turn on the lights for somebody to daven. So of course you can't turn on the lights. What do you do? Call a goy. Won't do you any good. If it was impossible to read before the light was turned on, it is prohibited to tell a goy or even hint to a guy, and even a hint in a way which doesn't infer a command, to get the lights on there. And if the light does get turned on, you cannot use the light in the room. Theoretically, it's not prohibited to hint to him. You're right, you can tell him a story. You could say, listen, it's very dark in the shul. And that would be okay, that would be considered to transgress the Isra Mil Akum if he turned on the light subsequently. But he would not be allowed to sit in that room. So it wouldn't have done you any good. Okay? Yes.
In the first example,
it's hard to right.
sleep when the light is on.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
And presumably if you turned off the light, you could then derive benefit and go to sleep.
Turning off the light is not the same as turning on a light. Why? Because you can go to sleep with the light on. It's difficult. But the overwhelming majority of people can go to sleep with difficulty if they're very tired and haven't slept in a couple of days, even if the light is on. Try it sometime. Stay up for 48 hours and then see if you can't stay up for fall asleep with the light on.
But in classes where you have no problem. Plus the
fact, what do you do using the darkness?
What? Yeah, well, you got using darkness, right. That's true. You also, you can't talk about using darkness. It's not benefit from... Right. Yes.
You don't say to the
goy anything.
Goy comes in goy. And he puts on the
fire. We will talk about that. We'll come back to that later on. Okay, now, the difference is, of course, that's where I underlined, only one candle is burning. Where there's a little bit of light, and he could have read, it was difficult, would have been difficult, but he could have read, and then the guy comes and he puts on all the fluorescent lights in the room, that's okay. In that case, you can derive benefit because there was a possibility of doing that activity beforehand, however difficult. But in case it was impossible to derive that benefit beforehand at all, then you cannot derive that benefit from the goy's melacha. Yes?
Would it make a difference if it was with a different population of people coming into the room?
No. If it was done for a Jew, it doesn't matter what population of Jews. By melacha drabbanan, it will make a difference, but not melacha d'oraisa, so we'll get to that later on. Yeah. Yeah. We'll come to that. Okay, as a matter of fact, you know, I'm going to ask you to limit your questions because a lot of things that you're asking will come to later on, okay? Now, it is permissible to say, in this spirit, I have no torn toilet paper, since the paper may be used, albeit with difficulty, uncut. Okay, there, again, it's like when you have one candle in the room and the guy turns on all the lights. If you have toilet paper, it's just not cut, so... Usually people don't use it that way, but it would be possible. So therefore, it would be permissible to tell a guy to, not to tell a guy, but to hint to the guy to tear the toilet paper for you on Shabbos. Okay? Again, a hint in the way of a story, not a way of inferring a command. Before Shabbos, it is permissible to say to a guy, why didn't you want last week to open the letters which came for me on Shabbos? It's a good example. What are we talking about here? Where you're telling a guy before Shabbos to do melacha for you on Shabbos. In that case, you're not allowed to tell him directly. You're still not allowed to tell him explicitly, come open my letters tomorrow. But you can hint him in a way which infers command that he should come the next day and open the letters for you. So on Shabbos, for a guy to do melacha for you on Shabbos, your hint must be in a way which does not infer command. Before Shabbos to do melacha on Shabbos, or on Shabbos to do melacha after Shabbos, your hint can even be in a way which infers a command. Yeah. You should mumble.
You
shouldn't make it clear. No, you shouldn't make it clear.
You
should not make it clear because then the second statement would be a command. Okay? So I just saw from Fave, not newspaper yesterday. I think one of the mayors of New York said, when it went out, he said, giving advice to fellow politicians, he said, when in doubt, mumble. It's a good principle in Allah, Amir al-Akum as well. Yes.
Does a mirror include a nod?
A nod, yes. A nod which can be a mirror as well. Yes. Okay, now. for a sick person. Now, sick person, we mean a cholish embo sakona. It could be somebody who has a fever, somebody who has a very severe cold. Anybody who's considered to be halachically sick, even if there's no grave, life-threatening danger, chas v'sholom, for a sick person's needs, one may tell a goy explicitly, even to do a melacha d'oraisa. Right? Even to go turn on the light. Or to go get a prescription at the drugstore. And the category of sick people is extended to include people who are suffering from cold weather conditions that require heating or hot weather conditions that require air conditioning. Okay? Now, in Chicago, this is obviously a very prevalent question. In this winter, it gets unbearably cold, and in the summer, it gets unbearably hot. I always wondered how so many millions of people manage to live in such an intemperate region. But you would be allowed, in one of those wonderful winter or summer days in Chicago, to tell a goy explicitly to turn on the air conditioning or heating on Shabbos. Again, as long as you're suffering from it. Can't just be, it's a little bit unpleasant. It would be more luxurious if we had heating or air conditioning. If you're truly suffering from it, especially if you have children in the house, then it's permissible to tell a goy explicitly to turn on the air conditioning or heating. Okay? Everybody's considered to be sick vis-a-vis heat and cold. Similarly, to save svarim, including mezuzahs affixed to houses, one may tell a goy explicitly even to do melacha d'oraisa. Now, this is a very good heter if your house is burning down on Shabbos. So in that case, you can tell, what? You can tell a firefighter to put out the fire, assuming he's not Jewish. Why? Because there are mezuzahs on the doors. And if the house gets burned down, the mezuzahs are going to get damaged, needless to say. And of course, if you have svarim within the house, the same halach applies. In order to save Kisvei Kodesh, in order to save all sorts of holy writings, Chazal were matir, they allowed Amir La'akum on Shabbos to tell a goy to do the work for you, to put out the fire. Okay? Cases where a great loss may be sustained. In cases where great losses may be sustained, it is permissible to hint, now, not to tell, in case B for a sick person, in case C where to save svarim, you're even allowed to tell a goy explicitly. But where you're going to sustain a great loss, then it is permissible to hint, even a way that infers to a command, to a goy, even do a melacha d'oraisa, but not tell him outright. Example, anyone who puts out the fire won't lose. In other words, what that means is, I'm hinting that they'll make money on the deal. The goy who puts out the fire. So I'm allowed to do that. Now, why do I say where you're going to lose the principal? Because let's say you have money invested in the stock market. And if you don't sell today, on Shabbos or Yontif, you know the price is going to go down very much by tomorrow, and all the profit or the killing which you intended to make is going to disappear into thin air. You're not allowed to tell a goy to go sell your stock for you under that circumstance. Why? Because as long as you're not going to may have a substantial loss of principal of the money you invested, the fact that you're going to lose the revach, the profit, doesn't play a role. You're going to lose every dime, it's losing from the principal, yeah. Then you'd be allowed to hint to a guy to go and sell your stock on Shabbos. You don't have to, right, your options are going the wrong way, right. Okay, so I want to point out here, I wrote this here on the board at the end, all the halachas of Amir Lenochi are true on Yontif just as they are on Shabbos. And anything which one is not permitted to do on Yontif, personally, the Amir al-Akum principle applies when it's not allowed to tell a goy to do it for you, for yourself, and Yontif as well. Okay? What? The second day is less stringent. There's certain more things in Shemot, but we won't get into tonight. I didn't take a look, but you're right. The second day is less stringent. Okay. The E. Cases where a goy may be told outright to do a melacha d'rabbanan. In the following cases, a goy may be told outright to do a melacha d'rabbanan. Okay? Now, this is called shvus d'shvus. What am I doing? I'm telling a goy to do a melacha d'rabbanan. Telling a goy, doing the melacha d'rabbanan is a shvus. A shvus is defined as anything which the rabbis forbade on Shabbos, as opposed to the Torah. telling the guy to do the melacha drabanan is a shvus to shvus, a double drabanan. Because telling a guy is only prohibited to drabanan. So telling a guy to do the drabanan is called a shvus to shvus. And it's... What? I said, except for these exceptions. And these are the exceptions. Where is it permissible to tell a guy to do drabanan? A, where there's a possible suffering or potential great loss. B, where there's a great need, a tzorech gadol. C, the need of a mitzvah, where in order to do a mitzvah, you have to tell a guy to do an melacha for you. Melacha to rabbanon only. D, arrival of unanticipated guests. All of a sudden, 15 people pile in for lunch. So you can tell a guy to do things which are only also to rabbanon for you in that case. Like to throw them out, right? You hire the bouncers. E, where results of the melacha drabanan could have been achieved by a Jew without any melacha being committed. In other words, he's going to go and do a melacha in order to do it. You could have achieved the same result by not having done a melacha. So then it's okay. For instance, let's say you could have taken something through an Eruv. And you know the guy's going to go through a way where there is no Eruv. So that's okay, since you could have done it anyway through the case where there's place where there's an Eruv. F, saving objects other than Svarim from a fire. To save Svarim from a fire, you can even tell the guy outright to transgress even the Oraisus. But here, where you're saving other stuff, other property, you can only tell the guy outright to do the Rabbanans, not the Oraisus. Okay? Examples. Taking a sitter to a shul where there is no Eruv. Of course, I'm not allowed to take a sitter to a shul where there is no Eruv, because I'm allowed to carry on Shabbos. But in most places, the Isser of carrying is only the Rabbanan because the Rishus HaRabim, the public domain, is only defined as the public domain midrabbanan. So therefore, since to me it's only a prohibition of the Rabbanan, I'm allowed to tell a goy to do this for me on Shabbos. The Olam is not makel on this. In other words, I've never seen in Chicago anybody tell a goy to take a sitter to them for them to shul on Shabbos. But it's on the books. You're allowed to tell a goy to take a sitter for you on Shabbos in a case where it's only Rishus HaRabim the Rabbanan. Bringing a child to shul for a bris, they do, yeah. But usually, even that, they'll do the bris in the house. So they'll see them do it, yeah, because in my love, having a bris in shul. Yeah. Okay, the problem is, the question is whether you would be allowed to take him back home, the kid, but I assume you would be allowed to. B, removing chametz from a house on Pesach from the house. Chametz is, not allowed to be in your house on Pesach. If you have no Erev, you wouldn't be allowed to move it out as well. If you have, however, a goy, you'd be allowed to take it out on Pesach. C, carrying a valuable mukta object to a safe place. Obviously, let's say you have a radio. And your kids started playing with it. And you can't move it yourself because it's muktzah. But that's only nisa d'rabbana. Moving muktzah is only nisa d'rabbana. So therefore you're allowed to call a goy in and have the goy carry the muktzah and put it away for you. Okay? If the only way to prevent the rabbim from sinning, to prevent masses from sinning, is by telling a goy to do a melacha d'oraisa, it's permissible to do so. And the example they give here is also Eruv. Let's say in order to fix an Eruv, you have to get a cherry picker. And the cherry picker has to go up and tie knots in the wire, which came down on Shabbos.
Cherry picker is a tool?
No, cherry picker is the trucks.
Oh.
You know, the trucks which have the
crane,
right. So clearly, the melacha is the rice involved in that. Nonetheless, since this melacha is now being done in order to save the masses from sinning, in carrying in a place where there is no Eruv, it's permissible to tell a guy outright to do that on Shabbos for you. Okay? Now, what happens, and so you asked this before, if the guy will do a melacha d'oraisa, but not by your request. Now, what do we mean by this? Let's read inside. Even if one knows that a guy will do a melacha d'oraisa in the course of fulfilling a request, such as the guy is asked to wash the dishes, and he will heat up water to do so. Nonetheless, since this melacha is not inherent in this activity, it is permissible to make such requests. What do we mean by that? In other words, let's say we have a non-Jewish maid, and she's going to wash the dishes, and you know that she's going to use hot water. So you're allowed to allow her to wash the dishes, even tell her to wash the dishes on Shabbos anyway. Why? Because you can wash dishes in cold water. It's inconvenient, more difficult, more time-consuming. But it can be done. The fact that she's now being mechallel Shabbos to use hot water is in order to save herself time and effort, not for your benefit. So therefore, I don't have to be concerned with the fact that she's doing even a melacha d'oraisa in order to do that activity on Shabbos, because the activity I told her to do is permissible to do on Shabbos. Okay? Twilight. Erev Shabbos bein hashmashos, one may tell a guy explicitly even to do a melacha d'oraisa, if the need is great, or it is necessary for Shabbos or for a mitzvah. Now, what do I mean by this? Let's say a person was mekabel Shabbos. Let's say a lady benched licht, and she was mekabel Shabbos. Or a man was mekabel Shabbos, but it's not yet seisa kochavim. It's not yet completely dark. It's twilight. In this case, it's not completely Shabbos yet. Why? Because we're only completely sure that it's Shabbos beyond the shadow of a doubt when it's nighttime, when it's nightfall, seisa kochavim. At this time, since it's still partially light outside, even if I as personally accepted Shabbos by davening or by lighting candles, I'm allowed to tell a guy to do work for me at that point, even a guy, melacha d'oraisa. Why? Because since this is only my personal acceptance of Shabbos, it's not an absolute acceptance of Shabbos. Therefore, I'm allowed to be more lenient. Chazal allowed me to be more lenient and tell a guy to do work for me at that point in time. Okay? Now, what about payment, employment, and work for self? One may pay a guy for work he did on Shabbos for a Jew, which was permissible, when the work was permissible. But monetary compensation should not be given until after Shabbos. If you call a guy in to turn on the air conditioning and you give him a piece of cake, that's okay, because that's not monetary compensation. But to give a guy monetary compensation on Shabbos is prohibited, and even if all you're doing is telling the guy, you know what, my wallet is in the closet, go take out money from there. Even if you're not taking the money out yourself and giving it to a guy, it's forbidden to do that on Shabbos. That's a transaction. A transaction which entails money is prohibited on Shabbos. Okay? Yeah. Can't put the money out before Shabbos. You have to pay before Shabbos. Can't put the money out before Shabbos. Okay, this is another halacha which is very important. One's non-Jewish employee. What? Yeah. Oh, there they don't have a choice, yeah. Otherwise, the taxi is not going to take you. One's non-Jewish employee may not do work for him on Shabbos unless the guy is working then solely for the purpose of gaining free time for himself on a weekday. Even then, the work may only be done on the guy's own premises. This is a very frequent case. Let's say you own an office, and you have a guy who you gave a lot of work. A lot of work. So much work that they feel they can't get it done in a week, they have to come in on Shabbos. They're not allowed to come in and work for you on Shabbos in there. Why? Because in essence, you were telling them to give them work, to do work on Shabbos. By giving them so much work, you were actually telling them to do work on Shabbos. The only way they're allowed to do that work is if they are not doing extra work for you on Shabbos, which they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. Rather, they're flex time. They work 5 days a week, but any 5 days they want. So they want to do the work on Shabbos, so they'll be free to go scuba diving on Monday. So that's okay, because then you're not telling them to do the work on Shabbos. You don't even care when they do the work. You just want the work done. The fact that they choose to do it on Shabbos, that's not your concern. But the thing is, they can't do the work in your office on Shabbos. That's prohibited. Your office, your place of employment, cannot be open on Shabbos. They can do the work on their computer terminals at home, wherever they're going to do it, but they can't come into the office to do work on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Okay? One may tell a guy even to do a melacha d'oraisa for his, the guy's own good. as long as the Jew does not explicitly tell the guy to use his, the Jew's appliances do that melacha. In other words, you can tell, let's say you meet a guy on the street, let's say you meet a non-Jewish friend of yours, and you can tell him, hey, you know what, today, Saturday only, there's a great sale at Marshall Fields. And you know he's going to do melacha d'oraisa to get the Marshall Fields. That's okay. Because he's not doing melacha for you. He's doing melacha for himself. But if you tell him, there's a great sale at Marshall Fields, take my car to go there, that's forbidden. Because although it's okay for the guy to do melacha, he's not allowed to use my stuff to do that melacha on Shabbos. Okay, so that would not be permissible. Now we come to the topic of benefit. Till now we were discussing what you're allowed to tell a guy to do, what you're not allowed to tell a guy to do. What about the benefit itself? So we already alluded to this before, and now we'll go into in greater detail. If there's direct benefit to a Jew from melacha d'oraisa performed by a guy for him on Shabbos, pleasure from that benefit is prohibited for a Jew until motzoi Shabbos b'chdei shi'aseh, which means enough time to have completed that melacha if it had been begun after Shabbos has elapsed. What do we mean by that? We mean that any time there's a melacha d'oraisa involved, let's say, for instance, you have a guy who cooked for you on Shabbos. He cooked specifically for a Jew on Shabbos. In that case, the Jew for whom it's cooked cannot derive any benefit from it on Shabbos. No Jew in the world can derive any benefit or pleasure from that cooked dish on Shabbos and cannot derive benefit from it on Motzoi Shabbos until the amount of time which it would have taken to cook the dish if you would have started Motzoi Shabbos has elapsed. For instance, let's say the guy made for you on Shabbos macaroni. And macaroni takes 10 minutes to make. So on Motzoi Shabbos, you wouldn't be allowed to eat the macaroni until 10 minutes after Havdalah. The amount of time you're only allowed to eat it after the amount of time has elapsed, which would have taken to done the melacha had you started after Havdalah Motzoi Shabbos. Okay? Examples. If a Jew directed a guy to do melacha d'oraisa on Shabbos, the prohibition of benefit is so severe that if, for instance, the guy turned on a light, the Jew must leave the room so as not to derive pleasure from the melacha. Okay? If it was totally pitch black in the room, if I came in and turned on the light at my behest, either because I didn't know it was us or because I was an Avarian, I wanted to be over in Avera, in that case, I have to leave the room. Once the light is on, I'm not permitted to stay there. Not only am I not permitted to stay there, no Jew is allowed to stay in that room. Again, with the example of Shul, let's say one Jew didn't know. And he went outside in the street and asked the guy to turn on the light on Shabbos in the shul. If it would have been impossible to read otherwise in the shul, even with difficulty, you can't stay in the shul. You have to go somewhere else to daven on Shabbos. Okay, better make sure your Shabbos clock is working. If the guy did the melacha d'oraisa without being asked, but did so for the benefit of the Jew, then the Jew must protest. He's got to say, I don't want it done. If he did not protest, the Jew may derive indirect benefit from the melacha. What does that mean? Such as carry on a conversation by the light, but not read thereby. So good examples are shul. Let's say the people don't really come to shul not to daven, but to shmooze. All of us know shuls like that. So that would be permissible. To come to daven is usur. Why? Because reading from the siddur is direct benefit from the light. To come to talk in shul is permissible. Why? Because although it's more pleasant to talk and make conversation in the light, but the evid, you can make conversation in the dark as well. So therefore, since you couldn't make conversation in the dark, it's only indirect benefit from the light, and you don't have to leave the room in order to enjoy that indirect benefit. Now, that's, again, talking about only if the guy did the melacha d'oraisa without being asked.
On any day.
What? No, on Shabbos.
What if he was asked Friday?
No, then it's usur. You're not allowed to ask him on Friday. Yeah, you have to leave the room in that case.
So, his heter is only if he wasn't asked at any time at all.
What?
His heter tether is only if he was not asked
at all. The tether is only if he was not asked at all. That's right. If the goy did not heed the protest, in other words, in this case, an example B, we're talking about a case where the Jew should have protested, but neglected to protest. What if you did protest vehemently, stood there with a sign and said, don't turn on the light? And nonetheless, the goy, being a smart Shabbos goy, did not heed your protest, and nevertheless turn on the light, the Jew may even read thereby, a Jew can read by that light. Now, that's why they're special, it's good to have trained Shabbos goy. What is a trained Shabbos goy? One Jew trains a good goy to be a Shabbos Jew for a Shabbos goy for another Jew. What happens is, I can't tell a goy, listen, when I protest, then it really means I want the light on. Because that means that, in essence, you're telling him to turn on the light. But another goy, another Jew, can instruct the goy and say, if you become a Shabbos goy for this shul, zos du wissen, you should know that when they to protest and tell you not to turn on the light, they really mean to tell that you should turn on the light. So, what? So it's good. So if a goy is a trained Shabbos goy, then he would know that that's what he's supposed to do. Can you sit down? Go. Yeah, you can sit down and go through the office with the goy, but only if you don't intend to use him in the future.
Okay, but if you intend to use him,
then you're stuck. Right. Yeah, the Institute for Shabbos Coin to advertise on the radio. Put your slip up in the buses. Okay. Now, similarly, if a goy cooked food for a Jew on Shabbos, that food is mukta, and no Jew may partake of it until Motzei Shabbos b'chtei shiyaseh. Until Motzei Shabbos, after it is, the time has elapsed for it to have been fully completed starting after Avdolah. If the Malachot HaRais, however, that was performed was Hotzah, there's no need to wait Motzei Shabbos Sichtei Shiyaseh. Now, this is a good kula. All Malachos are considered to be distinct, all 38 from Hotzah. Stands in its own category. Malach Hotzah is called by Chazal a Malacha Geruah, a poorer type of Malacha. Why is it a poorer type of malacha? Because if you think of all the other 38 forbidden malachos, they all have an impact on the object. Such as, you harvest the grain, you winnow it, you sift it, you knead the dough, you make clothing, you shecht an animal. All that kind of stuff has a positive beneficial impact on the object. The object has become improved as a result. By Hotzah, the object doesn't change at all. The same object which existed before you removed the object from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid, or carried it 4 amos to Rishus HaRabim, is the object which exists after you moved the object. So therefore, Hotzah is called the Malacha Gruah. It doesn't improve the object. And the ramification of that is, in terms of our discussion, that therefore there is no concept b'chdei shiyaseh on Motzei Shabbos. Where the malacha which was done for you for on Shabbos by the goy is one which improves the object, so on Motzei Shabbos you have to wait the amount of time it would have taken to improve the object in that way. But where the object was only moved from one place to another place on Motzei Shabbos, you don't have to wait the amount of time it would have taken to bring it on starting Motzei Shabbos. You can use it right away. Precisely because Hotzah is a Malacha Gruah, it's less qualitatively than all the other Malachos. We're going to see ramifications of that later on. A healthy Jew may derive benefit from a Malacha done by a guy for a sick person. In other words, let's say he had a sick person in the house who required hot food. He needed hot cereal on Shabbos. So the goy made a lot of hot cereal. You can derive benefit from the hot cereal, in other words, eat it, only if two conditions are met. A, the goy did not do any extra malacha for the benefit of the healthy Jew. And B, the product of the malacha is not mukta. Now, what do we mean by that? If the goy put extra food on the fire for the healthy Jew, that's not permissible. Why? Because he's doing extra work for the Jew. Similarly, Let's say the object was muktzah, and a good example of muktzah is raw meat. Meat before it's cooked, when it's raw, is muktzah on Shabbos. It's not edible, so it's muktzah. If the object is, it's, if it was muktzah, so then I cannot derive hanah from it on Shabbos. Even if the guy legitimately made it, prepared it for a sick person, which is allowed. We can tell a guy to even do a melacha d'oraisa for a sick person. If the guy did more for a healthy person, or it was something which was muktzah, which was brought for the sick person, then the healthy person is not allowed to derive any benefit from that thing on Shabbos. Okay? What? Oh, you're right. You're right, I made a mistake. The raw meat would be okay. The raw meat okay because once it's cooked, it's no longer muktzah. That's right. It would have to be something which, we even once cooked, it would remain muktzah. The case which is brought down, obviously, where something is cooked, that doesn't apply. The case which is brought down is where fruit was plucked off a tree on Shabbos. Fruit plucked off a tree, harvested on Shabbos, is muktzah. So then, in that case, even though a sick person can eat it, the person who's not sick is not allowed to partake of the fruit. But you're correct. It goes by the finished product, not by the raw materials. Okay? Even if these conditions are not met, in other words, the guy did do extra malacha for the healthy person, or the product of malacha was muktzah, nonetheless, there's no need to wait. Motzoi Shabbos ichtei shiyase. At least in this respect, Chazal were lenient. They said, since it was done for a sick person, although there were additional factors which prohibited from the benefit of a well person, nonetheless, Motzoi Shabbos, you don't have to wait the amount of time it would have taken to do that thing on Motzoi Shabbos before you partake of it. Okay? Melacha done by a guy for his own or another guy's benefit follows the same parameters outlined in numbers 19 and 20. And this is a very important kula. What do we mean by that? Examples. A light turned on by a guy for his own use, even if it is in order to do permissible work for a Jew can derive benefit from. What do I mean by that? Let's say you have a non-Jewish maid, and she turned on the light in the room to read a book, and then she walked out and forgot to turn off the light. Since she turned it on for herself, and whatever light there was the light she needed, she didn't add any light. There was one bulb, she turned on the bulb. She didn't add any light for you, nor is there anything muktzah involved here. When she leaves the room, you're allowed to read by the same light. That's okay. Okay? So even if she did turn on the light to wash dishes, which means she turned on the light to do work for you, nonetheless, you're allowed to derive benefits. Similarly, and this is a very important kula, water heated in a hotel or other setting where it is clear that the guy has no knowledge of or is not concerned with individual Jewish patrons. Let's say you're staying in a Holiday Inn over Shabbos. And they have complimentary coffee in the morning. You're allowed to drink the coffee. Why? Because the overwhelming majority of patrons in the hotel are not Jewish. And they do the same amount, no matter how many patrons are in the hotel, they always fill up the urn till the top. Regardless of how many there are. Whether they're 50, 100, 150, the one more Jew doesn't make them make more cups of coffee. So therefore, since they're not making it for specific patrons, and most of the patrons, the nature of the character of the hotel is non-Jewish, one is allowed to drink that coffee in the morning. Okay, good cooler, right? What? In Israel, of course you have a problem. In any Jewish homework, you'll have a problem. In any Jewish hotel. But not in a non-Jewish hotel, yeah. If there's one guy in the apartment building and there's hot water being turned on Shabbos, well, that may be true. Let's take a look in the next case. If the majority, if you're in a hospital, yeah, it would be the same thing. They're not making more necessarily for you, so that'd be okay. Okay, if the majority of people, or even a significant minority. In other words, what is a significant minority? It's enough people that the malacha may be intended for them. Of the population for whom a goy does malacha are Jewish, the malacha is considered to have been done for the Jews. And the classic case of this, we discussed this once before, I don't remember when, is Dunkin' Donuts on a Motsoi Pesach. Okay? It's entirely possible that the majority of customers, even on a Motsoi Pesach, I don't believe it, but it's entirely possible that the majority of customers in the Dunkin' Donuts on Motsoi Pesach are non-Jews. Nonetheless, there's a very significant Jewish minority of customers at the Dunkin' Donuts on Divan on Motsoi Pesach. And therefore, when they started baking the donuts or frying the donuts on Pesach afternoon, the afternoon of Shmini Shel Pesach, they were doing it for the Jews. So since they were doing it for the Jews, therefore you have to wait Motsoi Pesach before you partake of the donuts, b'chdei shi'aseh. The amount of time would have taken, I don't know how long it is, it could be it's a very short time, but the amount of time would have taken to bake the donuts on Motsoi, or fry the donuts on Motsoi Pesach.
We're talking about when Motsoi Pesach was on Shabbos.
No. You mean because they're allowed to fry? Yeah, Motsoi Pesach was on, or when Shmini Shel Pesach was on Shabbos, right? Because during the week, then you're allowed to cook for anyway. That's right. Okay? Another example, but this would even be true on a Motsoi Shabbos. If there's a significant, I don't know what the Metzius is. You would have to ask the Dunkin' Donuts people. It's all Jews on Motsoi Shabbos. Okay, so then a Motsoi. I'm saying regular Motsoi Shabbos. If also any place like that where they're on Motsoi Shabbos, they have a lot of Jewish customers, and they start doing work for the Jews on Shabbos, even if it's a minority of their customers, you're not allowed to partake of that thing until after Bichdei Shi'aseh. Okay? If on the other hand, the majority of people, or even a significant minority of the population, and by this significant minority we mean a population for whom a guy does malacha or goyim, in other words, that the malacha may be intended solely for them. In other words, let's say this is the case that you were bringing down just now. Let's say the hot water in the apartment building. If the overwhelming majority of tenants are goyim, or even if there's one or two goyim, but one could say that when the super turns on the hot water, he's always doing it for those goyim, because he would have done it anyway if only the goyim were in the building. So in that case, the malacha is considered to have been done for the goyim, and one can partake of the malacha which is being done. Okay? Now, I
understand that case. In that case, there's one hot water heater, right?
Now, in that case, so the thing is, there are other factors involved in that. That's why I don't want to. I'm not sure what Rabbi Aaron said, because Rav Henkin also had a heter for that, but I never looked into it. But the problem is, like he's bringing up, that there's additional problem there, that when I turn on my hot water spigot, and then more cold water comes into the tank, and it could be that that's not permissible. But let's say the heat in the building. What? It could be. I'm just saying I don't know about what the Matthias is. But just as I said, there are material in that case. But I just wanted to point out that another case, which is more glatt, is easier to deal with, is heating in an apartment building. Because the heating, you're not turning on anything. So since you're not turning on anything, so therefore you're allowed to enjoy the heat, even if there are overwhelming majority of Jews. No. The guy is a super, turns on the heat in the apartment building on Shabbos. Let's say Winston Towers. I don't know, but let's say the majority of tenants are Jews, right? I don't know if they are or aren't. But even if they are, since the super would have to turn on the heat for the significant minority of goyim, regardless, one would be allowed to derive benefit from it. Yeah. Again, there's not increasing any amount for the Jews. Yeah.
Well, he was mentioning that there's a certain amount of heat coming out. Let's say the vents that are open or closed.
Yeah. If it doesn't affect the mechanism, so you're allowed to adjust the vent, the flue or the vent, whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. In a case of 50-50% population, the malacha is considered to have been done for the Jews. In other words, where it's 50-50 even, and it was a malacha which would have been which adds for each individual, so the malacha is considered to have been done for the Jews. That would be such as in the case of the Holiday Inn. Let's say you had a hotel, which 50% of the patrons were Jewish. In that case, you'd have to be machmir or not drink the coffee. Examples of other ramifications are the heat, light, and elevator use in apartment buildings. An important note here that I'm not going to get into tonight, we do have a shir on Shabbos elevators, I believe, scheduled, but there's an additional fact of Marisayim which may be involved in elevator use. Some people say that even though it might be in the strict letter of the law permissible to use an elevator in an apartment building, now by this I'm not talking about a Shabbos elevator, Talking about you get in with a guy on the same floor as the guy, and you get out at the same floor as the guy. So in that case, the guy who's pushing the buttons would have had to do the same malacha for himself. He's not doing any extra malacha for you. So theoretically, it should be permissible. Nonetheless, some poskim say one should not do it because of marasayin. Because people are going to think that you were the one who's pushing the buttons. Okay? But then it is brought down that it's possible to be mako. Similarly, traveling by ship on Shabbos. The overwhelming amount of passengers are going was allowed to travel in that kind of ship on Shabbos. Okay, indirect benefit from the goy's malacha. What are, indirect benefit from the malacha of a goy is permissible. Now, this is a very important heter. What are we talking about here? Examples. Reading a letter which was inside an envelope opened by a goy on Shabbos. Why is it indirect? Because what did the goy do? He ripped open the envelope. What are you deriving benefit from? The letter inside. That's an indirect benefit from the goy's malacha. It is therefore permissible to hint to a goy in a way that does not infer a command to open a letter which is, it is permissible to read on Shabbos. In other words, not a statement from the bank that you're not allowed to read on Shabbos. Personal letter, you'd be allowed to tell him to rip, to hint to him to open the letter on Shabbos. Now, this would not be true, of course, by an air letter. Why wouldn't it be true by an air letter? Because by an air... No.
Where it's written on the envelope itself,
it's direct benefits. You're not direct, you're deriving benefit from the object on which he did the malacha. As opposed to a letter which is enclosed in an envelope, he did the malacha on the envelope, you're deriving hanah from the letter which was enclosed. Similarly, eating food which was inside a can opened by a goy on Shabbos. It is therefore permissible to hint to a goy in a way that does not infer a command to open a can on Shabbos, even if one personally refrains from doing so. Okay, we won't get into the issue of opening cans on Shabbos or not, but even if you're machmir not to open cans, you can have a goy open a can. Again, you have to hint it to him, and then you can eat the food inside the can. See, reading in a room in which prior to the goy's lighting candles, it was possible to read, at least with difficulty, if the goy then subsequently comes and lights more candles, like we said at the beginning of the evening, you're allowed to stay in there and read because it's only indirect benefits. What do I mean by indirect? You could have had that benefit beforehand. It's enhanced now. That has the same status as indirect. If there was a direct benefit to a Jew from a malacha derabbanan performed by a goy for him on Shabbos. Okay, now we're talking about not a malacha deraisa, a malacha derabbanan. Pleasure from that benefit is prohibited for that Jew and all members of his household until Motzei Shabbos, b'chdei shi'asa. But it's only members of his household. Any other Jew may derive pleasure from that malacha immediately. The product of the malacha is not considered mukta, even for the Jew for whom the malacha is done. And here's an example of ramification. You're all going to be very happy, at least those of you who rely on the Erev, that I'm just telling you this only a week or two before the Erev goes up. Objects brought michutz latchum through Rishus HaRami D'Rabbanan or bought on Shabbos. A classic example of this is a newspaper. You're not allowed to have a newspaper delivered to your house on Shabbos. Why? Because a guy is doing a malacha d'Rabbanan in order to get it to your house. One of several. Either he's bringing it michutz latchum, which is unlikely in Chicago. Michutz latchum means he's bringing it from 2,000 miles outside the city. That's unlikely in Chicago because there is no area, as far as I know, the major publishing presses are all within the city limits as defined by Allah. In other words, within the built-up area of the greater Chicago urban area. However, he brings the paper through a Rosh Hashanah Rabbin to Rabbanan.
The Jewish press or the other what? Newspapers that come in. You're talking about local newspapers.
I'm talking about the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But you do get the Jewish press.
Yeah, I didn't write that down here, but the truth, there is the issue of mail on Shabbos. I don't know if we're going to get to. I'll mention it in passing. There's a difference between a newspaper and mail. Mail, you do not contract with the United States Post Office to bring for you. The Post Office brings it to you because that's what they are there for, independent of what the patron pays them. You don't command the post office to bring to you the mail on Shabbos. You're deriving benefit from malacha, which they did. But you never tell them to do any malacha. So therefore, you're allowed to read the mail which they bring for you on Shabbos. They're not doing the malacha for you. They're doing malacha for themselves. They bring the mail to your door to get paid. by the post office, not in order that you should derive benefit from it. That's why you can read your mail on Shabbos. When, however, they're doing the malacha for you, such as when they bring the Chicago Tribune, they're bringing it to you in because you ordered the paper, so they're doing a malacha drabanan for you, not only are you not allowed to read the paper, but all members of your household are not allowed to read the paper until Motzei Shabbos, the amount of time would have taken for them to bring you the paper. However, guests in your house would be allowed to read the paper, and you would allow to bring the paper to them to read. Go like this and say, I can't read it, but you can read it for me. Why? Because it's not muktzah, so you can carry it, and they're not members of your household, so they're allowed to read the paper. But you're not allowed to read the paper.
So it's awesome
to subscribe to the trip for 7 days a week, yes.
If you intend to read it on Shabbos.
When there will be an
air...
No, it's us to subscribe. It's us to subscribe because of that. Because you're having the guy do a malacha for you. You're telling the guy to do a malacha for you on Shabbos. Somebody asked you for, is nodding considered to be telling a guy to do malacha? Yes. And telling a guy and telling the Tribune to deliver a paper to you on Shabbos is also telling to do a malacha for you. Now, important to note. Important. If and when there will be an Eruv and you will rely on the Eruv, then it'll be okay. Why do I say it's okay? Because then you have to think of it like this. The papers are brought in a large stack to the local distribution point, normally to your street corner, right? All the malacha done till that point is being done for rove of the people who own papers in the stack. Who are rove of the people who own papers in the stack? Goyim. They're not doing anything to your individual paper. When do they do something to your individual paper? Only that last few steps from the street into your house. When they throw the paper on your front stoop or when they bring the paper into your, put in your mailbox, whatever they do. If there's an Eruv, then that part of the malacha is permissible. It's not. There's no transgression of malacha the Rabbanan. So in that case, you would be allowed to read the paper on Shabbos. Okay? Now, if it is permissible to direct a goy to do some act, even if a psik ratio malacha will result. Now, psik ratio means normally you're not allowed to, if you know that your refrigerator light is going to go on Shabbos, when you open the door of the refrigerator, you're not allowed to do it. Hi, that wasn't your intent. Your intent is to take out food, but you're not allowed to do it because it's an automatic result of your activity. That's called psik ratio. Literally means you can't cut off a chicken's head and expect the chicken not to die. In other words, in the old days, they used to have a quaint game which they used to play with chicken's heads. Kids used to play with chicken's heads. So the Gemara says that a kid can't cut off the chicken's head on Shabbos and say, I didn't mean to kill a chicken. All I wanted is the head. Why? Because any time you cut off the head, the chicken is going to die. So therefore, you can't cut off the chicken's head because that's called psik ratio lo yamut. You're going to cut off the head, it's not going to die. But that is only usher by a Jew. To tell a guy, go take food out of the refrigerator, even though automatically there will result from that malacha a transgression of psik ratio, in other words, automatic the light will go on, is okay. Because a psik ratio is only usher for a Jew to do and not for a guy to do. So you could tell the guy explicitly to open the refrigerator door even though the motor or light will turn on as a result, or to put a cold but already cooked pot of food to heat up on a stove which will turn on automatically. He's not doing any direct malacha for you. Psik ratio. The food will become cooked. But since he's not doing it directly, it's only an automatic result, that's okay. Also, one might carry on a long-distance telephone conversation with a guy, even if the guy is located in a time zone where it already is or still is Shabbos. Already was or still is Shabbos. In other words, let's say you're speaking to somebody in New York on Friday afternoon. It's already Shabbos in New York, but he's a guy. It's okay. Likewise, if you're speaking to somebody in Seattle, and Shabbos is not yet out in Seattle, but it's out in Chicago, so that's okay as well. Now, we're really going to have to stop here because it's late. Someday maybe we'll come back to the rest of this year. Sorry about that. Which I didn't get to in the shir in brief, mostly taken from the Shir Mitzioni Balacha. First of all, it's brought down that if one stands to lose a lot of money by not making a payment or by not negotiating with a goy on Shabbos, one is allowed to negotiate with a goy send a payment through a goy or send a letter to be mailed with a goy even on Shabbos. This is, of course, where one stands to lose a substantial amount of money, similar to what we spoke about before, about Hefse Merube. Again, in a case where you're going to lose a substantial amount of money from the principal, there is a heter which is brought down by the Mishnah Brewer from the Chavos Yoyer to do Amira D'Amira. Amira D'Amira means telling one goy to tell another goy to do the malacha. In that case, since Amira L'Akum is in and of itself an Isid Rabbanan, telling another goy to tell the goy is a Shvus D'Shvus. And we mentioned already before that a shvus to shvus b'makom hefseg gadol is permissible. So therefore, that would be a way in which if one were in a situation where one stood to lose a lot of money and a malacha d'oraisa had to be done, it would be possible that one would be able to circumvent the iser by telling one goy to tell another goy. Again, b'makom hefseg gadol, you don't have to protest a goy doing malacha for you when you did not direct him to do so. Normally, you do have to protest a goy is doing malacha, even if you didn't direct him to do so. In a makom where, in a case where you stand to lose a lot of money from the principal, you would not have to make that protest. Another case of business dealings, which is relevant to Shabbos, is let's say the case which is brought down is when a goy comes to sell you milk on Shabbos. So you're allowed to select the milk you want from the inventory he presents as long as you don't yet actually own the milk. In other words, if you didn't fully pay for the delivery, you there don't yet own the delivery of milk. And since you don't yet own the delivery of milk, you're not doing business in your own possession already. And therefore, since you're not doing business with your own possession, you're allowed to indicate to him which milk you would prefer. Otherwise, if you're dealing business with your own stuff on Shabbos, that would not be permissible. That's really relevant only more primarily to wholesalers and retailers, not to our discussion this evening. One last point is an interesting thing which the Shari Mitzrayim B'Halacha brings down is a proof that the permissibility of doing shvusim, of doing the rabbanan, such as telling a goy to do malacha, even might apply to Ben Hashmoshos to twilight on Motzayu Shabbos. Where we see that is on Yom Kippur. It's brought down that even if it is not yet fully dark, one is allowed to blow the shofar, which is Nisid Rabbanan, on the Yom Kippur. Nonetheless, it's difficult to draw parallels, and it's possible that Amir al-Akum is a more stringent issue than blowing shofar, and therefore, while one is permissible, the other one might not be.